Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Pensacola, Florida, it's time for Pensacola Business Radio. Now, here are your Business Radio X hosts.
Hey, everybody. Keith over here, broadcasting live from Pensacola Business Radio down here at DeVillers Square. And I've got three wonderful guests this afternoon sitting across from me. I have Dr. Richard, but you're doctor of
criminology and criminal justice.
That's it. I was going for something bigger there, but that'll work.
There's nothing bigger, Keith.
That's it. That's the top, isn't it?
That's it.
That's works for me. All right. We've got Lori Murphy with Emerald Coast Keeper, because last time I almost messed it up, right?
That's okay.
This is our second time in your studio. Fantastic. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
Okay. And then I have Donna Kirby. You're like the Wahoo itself, right?
I try. I do what I can.
Yeah.
Yeah. I try.
Well, you've got some pretty,
All things Wahoo.
All things Wahoo. That's it.
All things lead down this road to the stadium.
That's right. That's right. Which I actually drove back here. What a wonderful day for baseball.
Yes. It's perfect. They played in Biloxi this morning. So.
Yeah. How'd they do?
I wasn't doing so great last time I drove. We're not going to talk about it.
We'll call it a day. How about that?
Some days are that way.
That's right.
So let's just get right into it, Doctor of Criminology. What brings you here to UWF and across the table from me?
Well, today, joining the group, I'm here talking about a new textbook that my co-author, Dr. Kimberly McCorkle, one of our professors there at UWF, and I wrote, called American Homicide, talking all about things that most people are watching on television in shows that we were discussing before our program began today.
That maybe aren't as realistic as they try to pretend to be.
Oh, they're just not even close, but it is always amusing. Of course, we're all talking about our favorite shows, our favorite movies, our favorite fantasies that our children hold about what, really goes on in criminal justice. In one of my past lives, I was a homicide detective in South Florida. And my co-author, Dr. McCorkle, was a former prosecutor here in the First Judicial Circuit. So, a lot of what we did in the text that differs from some of what's out there is infuse it with a good bit of reality of how things really are done. But also we focused on a lot more of what are the real things in the United States in terms of homicide right now. Most people you hear about the serial killing or cult killing or mass killing and school shootings, and while they do happen every now and then, and they're very dramatic when it happens and very tragic. It is a very, very small number of people who lose their lives that way. The two major ways this happens in the U.S. and frankly in most countries is confrontational homicide, which is like two young guys bump into each other and then it escalates. And
that's what happens if you and I go out together. That's it.
That's
man.
Exactly
it's done. It's
right.
Over.
It's on. And, things escalate. Boom. And
that's it.
And it's done. And the other is intimate partner homicide, which in our particular area, we had bad numbers for a number of years.
Yeah.
And that's both Kimberly McCorkle and I are on the Favor House Board, Women's Violence Shelter.
Yeah.
And have been for years. We're both past presidents there. And so we do a lot of work in that area as well as some of the national and international groups.
Do you find most of it to be sort of an accidental based from the incident? Or do you see more sort of like full-on planned out homicide?
Most homicide is not long and planned out. That's another one of those myths, much the same way as the serial killer who's hiding in the bushes, outside. It's pretty much myth. And again, largest segment of murder is confrontational, and that's very much, spur of the moment sorts of things. So.
And just ends up in a really bad day, right?
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
But, how long did you do that? How many years have you been doing that?
Well, I still teach in the Regional Law Enforcement Academy here. Yeah. I'm the primary gangs instructor in community-oriented policing, and I'm a use of force. I teach hand-to-hand combat. I've been doing that 32 years. For the academies. But I started in law enforcement in the very late 1970s as a 12-year-old patrol officer.
Uh-huh.
Okay, maybe I was a little older than that.
Yeah.
But not much.
So you didn't get picked on for that at all, did you?
No. Well, I was 19, but I looked 20 because I had my police-issued mustache.
So. There you go. Nice. Came with it.
So,
it comes
really
with the badge.
Ups the credibility. Well, the chief had to buy my gun and bullets, literally.
Yeah.
So I could shoot you, but I couldn't pay to
get
the bullets
to
do it. So I've been at this.
You can vote, but
while.
You can't drink. Yeah.
It's that sort of thing. Yeah. Yes, it was exactly that.
So. Yeah.
But now with that perspective and the humor aside, is we're the homicide rate, which, you know, if we watch media accounts and everything, we think, oh, crime spiraling out of control. We're in a 20-year decline in almost all crime in the U.S. Homicide is half the rate it was 20 years ago. So,
right, but that doesn't sell sponsorships on newscasting shows, does it?
It really doesn't.
Yeah.
Buy my book and you'll be safe. No, yeah. That's
that doesn't work either.
No. Well, that's,
but you'll be well
that's
informed.
The beauty of a textbook,
yeah,
is that it's, you know, not about the yeah, hyperbole and all the
so
nonsense.
Are you're teaching this to students?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I created the course at UWF about 12 years ago. I've taught it in two other places as well. The class literally, I don't think, has ever not filled within 24 hours of registration opening.
Yeah.
And it, which just speaks to the fascination we all
have.
And I was telling the class yesterday, because we're in the final week and a half of the semester, remember, as a summation, there's nothing wrong with you for being interested in this.
Yeah.
There may be something wrong with you for other reasons, but not
right,
not because of this.
Right.
Not because of this. And so it is. It's fascinating. We, you know, we have journalism majors, we have anthropology majors, psychology
sure,
majors. There's a wide variety of people on top of the criminology and criminal justice students.
So is it like How to Get Away with Murder, where you're like down on the chalkboard sort of drawing it all out on how it happens or how to look for it and all that?
Yes and no. In the lead up to the book, so for instance, two and a half, three weeks ago, we were in Denver and hung out with Denver PD's homicide unit, Boston mm-hmm, PD's homicide unit, Philadelphia, several others.
Yeah.
And I bring in also contemporary people who investigated these crimes more recently than I have, which has been, you know, a couple of decades for my time in homicide. But also the book, one of the things that's not out there in the textbooks is we did include a full chapter on investigation, a full chapter on what happens in court.
Yeah.
Because that usually gets
kind
of short shrift. Yeah, you really need
to have you see in every movie how the guy gets away in court because the police didn't do their
right. No DNA.
Or whatever, right?
No 3D, you know, imaging and things.
The glove didn't
fit.
Yeah.
Very rare. Well, on the point of getting white, now I said, you know, homicide's half the rate it was 20 years ago, but we used to clear homicides in the U.S. at about 90% in the 1960s. Now
right,
it's about 62%. So clearances of homicides are down, but before our listeners or anyone at the table gets nervous and thinks that we're at greater risk of homicide or nobody catching them,
yeah,
most of those have to do with kind of like where we are, who we're with sort of things. Gang involved shootings. So,
right,
you know, if I'm home watching reruns of Murder, She Wrote with my Geritol, I'm not at risk compared to somebody at the club at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
When, you know, you may have more opportunity for the confrontation.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
So
this is pretty amazing stuff. So what made you just like, look, there's not enough out there that something needs to be said and the course needs to have a redo.
You put your finger on the fact that, well, there just wasn't the right textbook. The only textbooks kind of in the field, and there were some,
like
and
Sherlock
they were
Holmes,
named really great.
Or...
pretty much that, or there were ones that were just repeats of the theory things we teach in the theory course, because people didn't really have, a lot of academics didn't have the necessary, you know, desire or background to really tackle the topic.
Yeah,
you know, from a practical standpoint. So this is both theory and, you know, kind of practice, if you will. But yeah, so for me, I mean, ever since, you know, working in that field, most of my consulting work is in use of force. I've been a use of force expert for about since 91 or 92, doing testimony in federal court and state courts and things like that on different sides of when something goes mm-hmm, wrong in the criminal justice system from use of force. But the study of homicide and violent crime was just kind of neck and neck with that over all these years. And I created a violence course and a serial killers course, cold case investigation, all at UWF. And, you know, the interest is always there. And so it's important for us as faculty, and this would be true of any kind of topic, is to give more facts. So it isn't just what do we see on television.
Yeah.
And therefore, what do we, a warped kind of sense of reality.
Maybe it should be American Homicide for Hollywood
next time,
so that we can all kind of get a real picture.
Well, you know, look for that one at Books a Million soon. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
We'll
see how
I get 20% brokerage fee on that idea right there.
You get 20% of that 6%
yeah,
of the
go.
net, and you would. I'll buy you coffee with that.
Fantastic. I will take coffee. Yeah. Fair enough.
Well, and so yeah, I did just sign to write a use of force book, and so we're in the same kind of idea because mm-hmm, these are textbooks, so it's, you know, it's not a it's not a money making venture. Sure. It's getting the knowledge out there, yeah. getting the information. So those are important.
It's going to leverage you as an expert. See it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's very interesting, you know.
Okay, area. So what I honestly really want to know, and I think these two are wondering, is
they're back in
as much. I mean, let's face it, you've been in a pretty whack world. You know, that's hard. That's a mentally challenging thing. I know, as he sits here and breaks down. How do you still have such, I mean, you've been happy since the second you walked in here. We have been talking and laughing and
caffeine.
Yeah, lots of it, right? But I can imagine you've seen some pretty whack stuff. Yeah. How do you get by on that?
Well, part of it is, you know, why do you want to do the work? You know, we occasionally see folks in law enforcement, again, the ones who sometimes make the wrong kind of splash.
Sure.
Who were very briefly in it, got in it for the wrong reasons, but studies show us year after year after year, you get into public sector work like this because you do actually want to help the public.
Yeah.
The humor is, you know, part of the armor, as any, you know, halfway good psychologist will tell you, is if you don't have a pretty good sense of humor and can, you know, deal with a variety of things yeah. that way, you won't stay in the, you know, profession as well.
Yeah.
Most of the reactions I get, Daryl McDaniel from Run DMC. I remember talking to him for about 10 minutes at a little private concert thing. And then he's like, what do you do, by the way? And I'm like, well, I'm a retired, you know, cop and I teach criminal. He's like, you are not like any cop I've ever met. I said, well, I'm sure that's probably true. Yeah.
You know, it's sort of a different side of the spectrum here. I'm sure
it is, you know, but love his music.
Yeah.
But no, it's a lot of times with someone who has, you know, a lengthy amount of experience and I mean, still teaching in the law enforcement and corrections academies, that's re-energizes you.
Yeah.
I mean, last week I was at George Stone here at the local law enforcement academy and doing a night lecture till 10 o'clock at night. And I told them, I said, you know, if this weren't important and it weren't still an honorable profession, you know, I wouldn't, you know, be
yeah.
here. You know, doing this at 10 o'clock at night with all of you, but it's that important.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, like so many people, depending on what your, you know, interests are, you have to be drawn to it. The work with, you know, women's violence. I mean, I've been in that movement for about 25 years now. And if you didn't realize it was important, you know, that's something everybody here, I tell everybody in the classes, we all know someone who's a victim of domestic violence
yeah.
or intimate partner violence. You may not know that you know them, but you do. And so, you know, and again, given that's the second leading cause of homicide in the U.S., that's kind of a big deal.
Are there other educators in town here that do what you do and have such a large community involvement? And I'm asking because we talk to a lot of the nonprofits and the charities and those organizations that help that kind of stuff. And I'm sure that they could all use some form of inside your mind education, for lack of a better
sure.
term. Although if you want to use it, that's 20% too.
Yeah. I was going to say trademark. Yeah. 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 Well, yeah.
But I mean, you got a lot up there that could probably help a lot of people.
It's a fair question. Well, I've served on the board of Big Brothers, Big Sisters and the Red Cross and Kiwanis and a number of those, you know, in the area. And sometimes it's because the majority of my law enforcement and correctional experience was also in management. And so, and I teach also in our public administration program, teaching public management, but you're right. And yes, there's a wide variety of faculty members. I mean, we're encouraged. You're kind of there to do teaching, research, and service.
Yeah.
And so, you know, service, we probably had, I'll tell the three of you that, you know, probably the toughest talk I've ever had last year. Dr. McCorkle and I had the opportunity, we're invited to the annual national meeting of the parents of murdered children. So of course there's only one criteria to get in that group.
Sure.
And we've been asked back again this year, but you know, it feels like I've been public speaking since I was 2 years old and I was scared to death.
I can imagine
to go. And I mean, I've helped a lot of families through that time and in different ways, but as a group, and it was the one of the biggest and best, you know, polite, you know, most courteous groups and asking intelligent questions. And then we just were talking about this the other day. A lady came up to us on the break after one of the two sessions we held. And she's talking about a case with her son who had been murdered. And, you know, with clarity and we said, well, you know, how long has it been? And she said, today marks 1 year.
Wow.
You know, for her as a former prosecutor, for me as a former law enforcement. I mean, we just did all we could to hold, you know, that together.
Sure.
But again, it's the reminder about why you're doing this.
Yeah.
And that, as you point out, and you're absolutely right, is that, that groups have to know about, you know, these things.
Yeah.
And so that they have the real information and the steps about what you can do. Now, we were talking about what's in the book that's not in, in other books. Another one is an entire, you know, chapter dealing with policy and programs and what do you do. A lot of academic research very properly ends with, and so people in policy should use this.
Right.
But there's usually not a really good mechanism that people, legislators, congressmen and women, et cetera, agency heads, they don't really necessarily have a way to get that. They don't, yeah. You know, those two groups don't talk as much as you'd like to see. It's gotten a lot better. And we have a lot of researchers at UWF who do a lot that contributes in real ways to a wide variety of disciplines, certainly not just in criminology and criminal justice. But I'd personally like to hear what these two ladies have to say about a variety of things, because look at me, just...
I could listen to you talk the whole day, honestly, because like Lori and I were saying forensic
files.
Right. Like, what about cold cases? Yeah. Do you have any, did you work with cold cases?
See, this
cases
is what happens when we all like CSI and How to Get Away with Murder and all this stuff.
Well, and, is interesting. 3 weeks ago, I just had the major paper in Trenton, New Jersey called. They had a 25-year-old cold case that they've just finally charged, who kind of everybody thought was the one.
Right.
So I did a big interview for them on that. And as I said, I teach that course. I've been involved with them. We're very, very pleased. Sheriff David Morgan has actually invited me to maybe bring students in and work with their cold case person so that our folks get hands-on, and you sometimes see, like in a variety of programs, where the fresh set of eyes, there's a certain formula and method with cold cases we call warming it back up. And you start over and you go through every scrap of paper and every bit of information you can find. If there's still, you know, family members, witnesses, former investigators available, you re-interview, you know, everybody. The trouble is, in the United States, we have 18,000 separate agencies, law enforcement agencies, most of which have fewer than like 60 total people. They don't have cold case units. They don't have the ability to have a cold case unit. They don't have the resources. And so sometimes if you can get like a federal grant and be able to, you know, set something up, pay either overtime. So some of it, it's there. You know, we think a lot about like the DNA evidence, which a lot of people think is the rock star. DNA for forensic identification has only been used since the late 1980s.
And it
typically does not play a role in most cases. It's great when it's appropriate and have it. But if I get to the scene of something and Keith is standing over, you know, the body with a smoking gun,
I'm holding
my business card. He told me to do it. Then we don't need the DNA evidence.
Yeah, sure.
And then what we call the CSI effect, you get into court and sometimes the attorneys will say, well, where's the 3D imaging? Where's the laser? Where's the DNA? Hmm. And many of the folks who have watched the shows think, yeah, that's right. Where's all that stuff? Even though you don't need it.
Even though I'm standing there with a smoking gun. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so
waving your card saying, I did it.
Which is also why we have the chapter on what happens in court.
Yeah.
And we have a separate chapter on technology. And so, it was a 3-year, you know, kind of a labor of love doing, you know, writing the book. I mean, it very involved, as you might imagine, and keeping it, I mean, right up till press time with Sage Publishing, one of the top academic publishers in the world, swapping out stories to insert in some of the, you know, inset boxes. So you're trying to use,
yeah.
I mean, we have some of the classics of the last, 20 or 30 years in the book, but also because students, all of us, like the illustration of a story of, you know, when did I actually hear about a real, you know, kind of case. So we may have the Jonestown massacre in there, but that's getting pretty dated for anybody who we see, you know, in the classroom to understand, you know, cult killing. Ted Bundy, sure, absolutely, still the
Waco
poster boy,
or any of those kind of things.
Yeah, so we update and have put in, you know, contemporary examples that people can, you know, kind of relate to.
Unfortunate, you have contemporary examples to use.
Sadly,
you know what I mean?
We do. There's no shortage.
I wonder, did you have, you know, that controversy about the Stephen Avery case up in Wisconsin?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you have a strong opinion either way on that, or it was fascinating to me to watch the two sides kind of go at it.
It is. And what I know, you know, I was mentioning about doing the litigation consulting. Mm-hmm. And so I do an awful lot of that. And what I'll tell, you know, students in those kind of cases is, well, get me all the reports. You know, as a scientist, it's like, well, I have to see all the reports.
Right. Yeah.
And which is fun and interesting. I mean, it really is. I mean, you have to keep that perspective, like you were talking about with the sense of humor of, this was an actual case. There was a tragedy that occurred here, mm-hmm. et cetera. But, you know, what can we learn from it, take from it? Where does the truth lie, if there is truth, or at least, you know, facts of however many sides to something, you know, there are.
Yeah.
But it's endlessly fascinating. It, you know,
it really is.
We kind of agree. So I'm lucky. I'm fortunate. I mean, and I admit that there's a lot of fine, fine educators who do you know, awesome work in a lot of fields. I'm lucky to have a field that, you know, everybody's interested in, and it matters in a democratic society. Yeah. So
fascinating work, man.
I'm lucky.
Cool. Can you buy the book anywhere, or do you have to be a student?
Amazon, you know, the main vehicle for a textbook is through a publisher to universities and colleges, but apparently it's already, I don't know how they do their little order things, but it's sold out several times on Amazon, which could mean 5 books. I don't know. You know, again, we don't.
All we care about is sold out.
We don't
man.
Know. Right.
It could be one.
Darn right. This book has been sold out repeatedly. But
back
yeah,
order.
Amazon. People can get it on Amazon.
Cool. All right.
And 2 days in Amazon Prime.
Nice. There you go.
I'm just saying.
Well, thanks for hanging out. Don't leave, because I'm sure when we're done, we'll probably have a million more questions to ask. So, okay, Lori. You've been busy with Emerald Coast Keeper. I know. I've been keeping up.
Yes.
So fill us in.
Here, when was it? September or
October? Yeah.
I know. Look at this. You can tell he's an instructor. He's covering my notes.
Your notes.
I didn't come with notes last time. Yes, we've really kind of, after we got all the housekeeping done, after starting it back up after all those years,
decided to keep you busy.
Yes, it's great. I love getting the phone calls and the emails. You know, I think one of my very first emails was, hey, I think we have oil that has washed back up on the beach in Johnson Beach. Can you check? And I'm just thinking, oh my goodness, you know, and of course I have to take everything they say seriously. I
sure.
take everybody's call or email. So I go
out there.
So
please make it a serious call or email.
Yeah. Yes, please, because there's only me.
Yeah, not just because you want Lori to come over for margaritas later. So.
Exactly. Well, I don't know. I might like the margaritas later. Better than coffee.
So better have oil and margaritas. No.
Exactly. But, you know, from a distance, you know, I look at it and I can understand that there could be definitely, you know, some misunderstanding because there's dark, chunky material. And basically what a lot of that is just plant material that actually kind of builds up underneath the bottom of the sand layer of the Gulf of Mexico. And when you get those winter storms that come in and they crash and they dig up the bottom of that Gulf of Mexico, releases a lot of that plant material.
But we're all on high alert since BP, so
absolutely.
You see a black speck in the water, it's like code
it's
red.
Like, and I get the calls, that's right. And it's like, okay, so that's kind of what I do. And we've had folks give me information about, I have bought this 43-acre plot of land here in Holt, and the government has purchased 50 acres next to me and wants to build an industrial park, but this is a nature preserve, and, you know. So you get a variety of different things, even though I primarily work on water quality, you know, for fishable, swimmable, drinkable water, because
and
I enforce the Clean Water Act. That is my job to enforce it. And we don't work for the government. We don't work for the water company or Gulf Power. You know, we work for the community here, whole panhandle,
which is great.
And I am their voice, and I'm the one that's going to tell them what's really going on. And I'm going to test the water and let them know.
But I think you said it though. I mean, yes, you're protecting the water, but anything else that might infringe on it. And we constantly get stories of all the time of people who weren't supposed to build this there. You know, somebody slipped somebody a $50 and, well, it's probably more than $50, but you know, and the next thing you know, you're cleaning up waste, all these waterways and, you know,
and
I mean, look what happened to Bayou Tahoe over the last, what, 20 years.
And Bayou Tahoe is a good example, and Bayou Chico as well, because unfortunately before the Clean Water Act passed in 1972, a lot of these industries needed water to make them run. Yep. So they were built there. They were dumping effluent, illegal hard metals, heavy metals out into the water. And, you know, they, as far as they were concerned, they were not violating any laws because we didn't have a law that protected the water. Mm-hmm. And so there we go.
Yeah, the whole common sense was never written in there.
No.
Absolutely. So now you've got these bayous just covered full of sediment, and they're doing a study on Bayou Chico right now. It's we received a $100,000 grant to go in there
sort
and kind
of
find out
stuff,
how
right?
much is there, how deep is it, and if we remove it, where are we going to put it?
Right.
And there's a big debate going on with Bayou Chico right now because the Bayou Chico Association was promised these two little lakes. They call them Johnson Lakes, but they're really like Clark sand pits.
Mm-hmm.
And even though Bayou Chico was dredged decades ago and was that material was placed in there, we really can't just assume to place it there because it could still cause harm because horizontal and vertical travels with materials. And so now we're like, well, we can't necessarily say we're going to put it in the Johnson Lakes or we're going to put it in the Clark sand pits. We need to find out exactly what it's, what, how much is it?
Right.
What is it? And where are we going to put it? What are we going to do with it?
Yeah.
Wow. You know,
isn't there a way to sort of get some nature to do its nature thing and filter that kind of stuff out?
Yeah, they talked about that. You can,
like, with the sea oats and all that kind of stuff.
There's things
I've
like that,
seen...
but unfortunately, we don't have many currents in the bayous as we do out in the
Gulf
of Mexico.
So it doesn't move, right? Okay.
So it just it goes down to the bottom and it just lays there like a carpet, just like an oil mat. Mm-hmm. When the oil spill happened, it just lays as a carpet and it's just right there. And sometimes it gets stirred up, sometimes it doesn't, but it's affected a lot of the fish. And we don't have a lot of clean bodies of water here, so it's kept me so busy in Escambia County. I haven't even been able to reach out to some of the other counties yet.
We need to reach out to some of these young, innovative entrepreneurs and see if they can help you come up with something that could then go to market. There's got to be a way to do this that's quick and fast.
Maybe I can go to the engineering department at UWF.
Well, I was going to ask
They're actually upstairs. If, we can go walk up there when we're done.
The Innovation Institute is upstairs.
Let's go find out.
I was going to ask you if you'd worked with, you know, any of the biology folks, because I know we've had several of the faculty who were involved in a lot of the, you know, restoration kind of events and ongoing research.
Yes,
but I didn't
Carl
know.
Moore, and I'm sure you're familiar with him.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
I've also worked with Chips Kirchenfeld, and he is on my board of directors.
Oh,
and
excellent.
He's a great guy. He's given me an awful lot of information. Of course, alma mater, my UWF is my alma mater. Mm-hmm. I have a degree in oceanography and a master's.
See what I did there? See
GIS.
I did that?
That was good.
See that?
Good,
Kate. Right?
Good.
So, you know, I do work with, there's a lot of great scientists in the environmental science department and the department of biology, too.
Right.
So there's just some great folks. And I'm really impressed with their help.
Well, it's great synergy, right? And of course, with students being, you know, young and idealistic as they should be, you know, at that point, great
That's
opportunities
next great
for,
idea.
You know, leveraging
Absolutely.
That.
I'm putting together an intern program right now, in fact.
Awesome.
That's going to utilize UWF students to get out there and really kind of understand what is going on out there and how do we test the water and you know, what are we seeing here and where did it come from? And let's track it. Let's see where it can go.
I remember in high school biology, maybe all of us kind of had that. Well, lucky being in Florida, you know, is our high school biology teacher.
He went to the beach.
And that was down around Tampa. Took us to to some of the estuaries coming off of Tampa Bay and learned so much from that.
Yeah.
You know, yes.
Really
do
great.
Be amazed because we just look at it and it's beautiful. But when you get right down to it, should we swim in it?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, looks can always be deceiving.
Now, do you have counterparts, Lori, in Okaloosa and Santa Rosa counties? Or is it you just basically in Northwestern
Florida? I have the entire panhandle, but we have over 240 waterkeepers across the world. We have them in China. Wow. We have them in Afghanistan. We have them in South America. We have them in Canada. We have one in Mobile. We have one in Miami. We have one in Tampa, Sarasota area, and one in Apalachicola. So I basically take from Perdido Key all the way to Apalachicola, and I work on all the streams, creeks, rivers, bays, bayous, and Gulf. Lakes. I think I said lakes.
Have you ever interacted with Gina Malanson or anybody at the Gulf Coast Citizen Diplomacy Council? Because, of course, we have international visitors through here all year long on a variety of topics. One of them is ecotourism. And I know that, you know, that would probably be a natural joining of having you do a presentation, you know, for some of the visitors.
Well, I'm a very big fan of ecotourism, especially I did a lot of studies in Senegal, West Africa, on the climate change problems that they've had out there using GIS software.
Right.
And what it comes to be is mangrove trees, M-A-N-G-R-O-V-E, not mango. Some people think I say mango, so I'm going to spell it. Those actually are really good at absorbing the carbon out of the water. And
filtering it out through the leaves.
It filters it out, and it helps us to reduce climate change. But ecotourism, I'm trying to convince the folks out there in, like, South America to stop cutting down the mangrove trees and using them for fuel and putting condos and resorts up, because what it's doing is it's just causing a larger delay in the absorption of all the carbon in itself. And I always thought that planting maybe the red mangroves or the black mangroves here in the panhandle, if we could plant them and they would stay, might be a great idea to kind of encourage that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we're almost too cold for mangroves because we're almost just out of that area of, you know, the 30 degrees just north and south and our tidal zones that really are great producers and of mangrove trees. But we had one. We did have one tree. And I was so excited.
Don't
Dr. Meyerhart showed it to us, and we had one.
I don't think it
one.
Works that way.
But unfortunately, when we had that bad ice storm about a year and a half, 2 years ago, it killed it. And it was the only one.
You mean
one
the first snow since 1989?
Yes, that was crazy.
Yeah.
That's where my one palm tree went.
One.
Yes. Yes.
So, what do you need from the community that could help you in any way, shape, or form?
Well, what we need from the community is we need support. We are a nonprofit organization, so it's important that you, if you care about climate change, you care about your water, your drinking water, swimmable, fishable water, because we do have a lot of polluted waters in the area from Escambia River to Perdido River, all the way out from either paper factories, coal ash plants. There's numerous places that are still actively dumping, and you want to keep clean water, go to my website, www.emeraldcoastkeeper.org, become a member. You'll get my monthly newsletters. There's different levels of membership and participation. I can tell you what's going on whenever we're having events. I have lots of education on my website, things that are going on, stuff that you can learn, teach your kids, teach your neighbors, and even some domestic things that we can do right in our own homes, in our own yard, to help prevent pollution in our drinking water.
Yeah. I'm still stuck on the fact that you said people are still dumping in the rivers, companies. And
it's amazing.
Yes. In fact, the Crisp plant in Pensacola. In fact, I have been actively testing there. I'm going back again next week.
Are they aware that they're like under watch?
I think they are. I've been in the newspaper and on radio, they know I'm watching.
Who's this chick hanging out in the reeds behind the streams?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, here I am.
No, I wish I had camera for that. That was great, you guys.
Well, you know, the EPA passed a law last December that stated this. Okay, we have a lot of these coal ash dumps. They're unlined. And so now on, if you are actively using these and you burn coal and that ash goes down into that dump when you're finished, well, you're going to have to dry it out. You're going to have to remove it and dry it out. Well, the EPA says, but if you're no longer using that coal ash pit, then you don't have to worry about it. They didn't come up with anything to dispose of the old one sitting there. So they're in an island in the middle of the Escambia River.
Yeah. So for every piece
what
of
could possibly go wrong?
Right?
So
yeah.
We've had just a little bit of flooding, and we have a little
Plus
bit of
wind
here,
and rain,
and so you
Lord
know,
have mercy if a hurricane comes through
between
in
the
next
lines. And so
4 months.
Unfortunately, we get the arsenic, and we get a lot of sulfur gas and things like that that are leaking into the Escambia River.
Oh.
The fish are exposed to it. We have wells in that area that tap into the aquifer that water goes into. And as I recently looked at every single well reading, 32 wells in the Pensacola area, we do have a lot of issues in that area. ECUA is trying to do as much as they can. They're putting carbon filters on there. But the best way to resolve it is not to make ECUA have better filters. It's to,
yeah,
which is a lot of people want
Here
to
we go
do.
With the common yep. sense thing again.
It's ECA's fault. They need to come up with a better filter.
Yeah,
no, let's just stop dumping
the
and polluting.
Yeah.
That's work on the source of the problem first. And yes, well, here I got a little question here by Donna. Should we drink our tap water? Absolutely not. Absolutely do not drink your tap water.
Filtered always, huh?
The EPA has a very lax ruling on what you can and cannot have in your water. And unfortunately, it's not healthy. You can either filter your water
through like a Brita or the things
osmosis.
On your refrigerator stuff.
Correct. You can. Okay. I have like a triple filter in my home. There's still just a lot of things in there that are not healthy for you. A lot of heavy metals and things that are still. The carbon filter can't take out everything. It's not safe. And sometimes too much of one can go in because it works like this. Like if you have 32 wells in the Pensacola area. And we all tap into 2 out of 3 of them. So let's say that here's our 2 out of 3 wells right here. Okay. And this is where we live. We're going to these 2 wells. Well, they get really polluted. They take a monthly reading. Oh my gosh. Oh, there's way too much lead in this water. So they're going to shut off that valve and we're going to go over here. But meanwhile, this one is still has the lead in it. And they're just hopefully waiting that it'll, you know, go on its way or filter through. And then they're going to hook you back up to it. So we got a lot of preventative issues, and a lot of it is us. Yeah. We, as consumers, are dumping paint thinner and antibiotics down this toilet and painkillers down the toilet and down the sink and oil in our sewer systems, and we're washing out paint cans, and we're actually polluting, and we're having our yard sprayed
Those
with
are
nitrogen.
Good points to make,
And we are, the rain comes, we're getting way too much over-fertilization going on in golf courses in our homes, and it's running down into the sewers, goes into the aquifers, and it's coming back and causing things like red tide and disease and fish kills.
My head is ready to explode.
I know, I want to run and go.
You have a huge... huge job responsibility. Like,
And the educational part of it, you know, being here.
It's a whole culture.
Yes. So important.
I'm working on a grant right now. I was turned down by one, but I'm still hoping on the other
one. Don't give up.
I'm not giving up. We're trying to put together
I'd like to have some water today.
Mobile,
so don't give up.
A mobile classroom where I would like to go to all the schools in the panhandle and start teaching them and empowering the children and having contests. And they could win software and lots of money for their school to work on getting their parents to sign, you know, a moratorium saying, hey, we're not going to dump anymore. We're not going to do this. And, you know, we're going to be careful. And whichever school has the most votes that comes or moratoriums that come back signed is going to win. So we're trying to work on that. And
Wow.
Yeah.
I might know somebody you could talk to.
Great.
I will do. I'll see what I do this. I do. I talk to people. So I might know somebody.
Do you do it professionally? Talking
you know,
to people?
I don't know if we're going
to
call this professional,
do you have an
but you know,
talking
we're,
to people?
We're going to hang out for a little while.
I think
while.
Don and I feel left out.
I know,
we're
right?
Like, we're not the professional speakers here.
So, okay. Let's give them contact information again so where they can get to you and get any help that we can give you.
Okay. You can go to any of my social media at emeraldcoastheaper.org. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. You can go to emeraldcoastkeeper.org for my webpage. There's lots of information on there. You can sign up to be a member. You can sign up for newsletters. There's all kinds of interesting information, all kinds. You look up the swim guide. Swim guide is a big thing for me right now. You can download it. It's an app on your phone. And I look at it every morning, the readings of the water that where people fish and swim. And that's in the Gulf water currently, in the salt water and the bays. And you can tell whether there's a warning or not because it's not publicized. Mm-hmm. And you can download that app and I will let you know whether it's safe or not to go in that water.
Which is awesome. So every day you know where you should or should not let the kids go frolic.
Correct. The swim app, www.thecoldcasesnetwork.org. Download it. It's free.
What a great idea.
Especially if you have kids.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Hang out for a little while.
Absolutely.
I've got some people you need to talk to. I know. So now we get to get into the fun part of the day.
Questions here.
Wahoo. Yeah, go for it. By all means.
This is something following up on. What you do is amazing, Lori. I am just, I've got a million questions for you when we're done here.
Oh,
so
great.
Thank you. Following up with what you've done, I mean, this is great. Now you've got me a schmo here talking about baseball. So.
No,
you're just as much of an integral part of this community as these
well,
two are.
And we're going to make the UWF tie-in again, too, because of football at Wahoo Stadium.
Go Argos.
Yeah.
That's
right. Yeah, go Argos. Yeah.
See what I did?
See? You are a professional.
He's a magic man.
It's amazing.
Because I really didn't plan it this way. You guys all booked yourselves. It just happens.
You told us to book ourselves.
I did. I didn't tell you what day, though.
Take credit for it, Keith.
Okay, yeah, all right.
That's it.
So talk to us about Wahoos, because it's just the sun's out. It's great time.
It's
my daughter's
season.
Playing softball right now. Yeah. So I'm like, it's baseball.
It's
time.
Baseball season. We just finished our first homestand. We just entered our fifth season, our fifth anniversary.
Awesome.
So, which we can't. We're all kind of scratching our heads still. Can't believe it's the fifth season already.
Right. Yeah.
It just seems like yesterday that we were in hard hats opening up that stadium.
Yeah.
And here we are in year five. Yeah. It's amazing to me.
Trying to fill the seats. And now we're trying to
That's right.
add some more because they're full all the time.
Oh my gosh, it is fantastic. The reception that we've had here in Pensacola, even outside of Pensacola, just northwestern Florida, has been incredible. And
we like
people
baseball.
Yeah. And that's so welcoming. I mean, we get so many people coming down from Cincinnati visiting us. We've got folks coming over from Texas to visit us. We've actually done studies with Visit Pensacola to find out where our tourists are coming from.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing when you look at the charts and stuff. And Pensacola is really getting on the map. I don't know.
We
if,
are worldwide.
It's crazy.
It is
right?
crazy. We had some people here from London last week. Believe it or not, I came all the way from London just for good old Pensacola.
Isn't that fantastic?
So, yes, it's absolutely awesome.
I sat in on that Destination 2020 panel that was going on by Visit Pensacola and Visit Florida put it together. And just the statistics of where we will be in 2020 were astounding and exciting and just invigorating for the whole area. And I'm thrilled for all of us. And for the Blue Wahoos to be here and be a part of that, we're just absolutely honored.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just the reception. I mean, I've seen each of you guys at our games, actually. Richard, we'll be working closely when the football comes to the stadium and stuff. So
so they're going to play football in the stadium?
In the
How's
stadium.
This going to work?
We're so excited.
They've actually already done it. It's really kind of the first time I saw it, it was kind of mind-blowing to see a football field painted on our beautiful baseball field, right?
Do you feel a little threatened?
A little bit, I'll be honest with you. Yeah, it was something like, what is going on here?
Someone's graffitied the field.
Yeah, yeah, how did that happen? But it's pretty exciting. And in fact, during the off-season, we extended the left field fence by 17 feet so that we could make room for the end zone and have, you know, it's a legitimate football field size. And we had the scrimmage back in October, I think September, possibly.
That was great.
Really exciting. I mean, I think that's when our fans were really getting pumped up about that.
Yeah,
so
because it was real all of a sudden. You're like, oh, wow, we are really doing this.
Something we'd talked about for years, but here it is in our face, and people loved it. We loved it. We couldn't be more thrilled.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And that's it. And again, bringing, you know, the folks when they set up UWF, you know, all those years ago, decades ago, you know, now 50 years, you know, it was away from town for growth purposes, but you know, the importance of the connection to downtown and the Wahoos have absolutely been so important in that and just invigorating Pensacola overall. But the partnership, you know, and the work with the university is fantastic.
Well,
and I mean, thrilling.
It's been something, like you were saying, in the works for so many years, and for us to be at this point, it's really, we're tickled pink.
Yeah.
Just like UWF is, and sitting in these meetings and kind of seeing the vision coming true is just something else. And our stadium has always been designed as a multi-use facility, you know, and so can you think of anything better to do than bring the citizens of Pensacola football also?
And how many places get to have, and I would say this for baseball too, you know, to have the bay as a backdrop.
Right.
I mean, you know, my wife talking about, you know, being able to do sailgating.
Sailgating, that's great.
You
know, I like that.
True.
Sailgating. Yeah.
And you hang out there on the water, sometimes far enough, you can catch a ball.
It is gorgeous out there.
Absolutely.
It really
so
is.
So pretty.
You know, we were actually, last year we came in first place out of 160 minor league teams for what they call the Best Seat in the House Awards.
Should.
because of the venue is just, we're so lucky where we sit.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because there's only, what, three major league baseball stadiums that sit on the water.
Right.
Seattle, San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Doesn't Tampa sit by the water?
No.
Waves are...
And us.
Not currently. Tampa doesn't, but who knows what their plans are.
Once they see Wahoo Stadium.
Yeah.
Well, we were in our first year, we were kind of blown away because that was the same year that the Miami Marlins opened up their facility down in Miami. And then also the Boston Red Sox had opened up their minor league facility down there. And we were up against, we were in a competition for best stadium and we beat them. We actually beat those guys.
That's what happens when you surround it in water.
Absolutely. It's something we're very lucky. I love it. Thank you.
I'm a huge fan. This is for $5 to sit down and watch a game and hang out with the sun going down. It's something else.
It
takes me back to being 10 years old again.
It really does.
Growing up in St. Louis, we'd go see the Cardinals all the time.
Oh, that's Cardinal fan.
He didn't even care about the game. It was like the pretzels and the hot dogs and just hanging out with dad or mom.
Wait, so the fact that I had the Toledo Mud Hens, is that a problem?
You know what? As long as it was baseball and the same chilling out, I really don't.
Well, then the Pirates had
there. The Pirates, that's right. Gas. They're still there.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. Keckney Field, great little field. Great.
Yeah.
It's like football. You don't care who wins.
I know.
It's the sport and having fun. And
that's true. When's the next home game?
We start Friday. They're back in town Friday. Yeah. So we're pretty pumped up about that. But it's funny that we're talking about this because I can't tell you guys, I walk around the concourse every single game. I haven't missed a Blue Wahoos game yet. And when I'm on the concourse, at least once per homestand, I get somebody who says, I don't even like baseball and I can't wait to get back. And it's exactly what you're saying, Keith.
It's not only the game, it's the venue. Right.
It's the socializing, it's the networking. I haven't seen you since high school. Let's catch up, you know? And so that really adds something to it. And then they feel welcomed. You know, I work with my staff to create kind of an atmosphere where this as your living room and you want to invite your friends in and you want them to come back and see you. So that's kind of what we try to set up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the kids like it too. I mean, you know, my youngest is playing softball and then was helping coach boys baseball last year. So we came and did the whole home run tunnel thing.
Nice.
I'm telling you, it was like I was 10 again. So just trying to get back for 10 more minutes. So. Uh-huh.
Well, we have that roach run that we do. And the funny thing is, so we do the roach run bottom of the fourth inning every game, right? And it started out every third game is when we were going to do that. But after every single game, we send surveys out and ask the fans, hey, what did you like about coming to a Blue Wahoos game? How can we improve? Because we want to always put the best product out there.
More roach runs.
Well, we started hearing that. You know, we love the roach run. Why didn't you guys do that tonight?
Yeah.
You guys should do that every game. So now we do it every game. But the funniest thing to me is when we go down there and we see the kids all lined up and everything, half the time the parents will come up and say, why can't I run in that?
Exactly.
Why can't I run? We're like, do you see how big you are and how little that two-year-old is? It's not fair. So, yeah, but then the dads get in there. Well, I've got to carry my baby. So, you know, it's pretty fun, but we love it.
Quit it, Keith.
The kids love it. And then Sundays, the kids get to come down and run the bases after the game and just, it's magical. It really is so fun.
Well, I thought that was one of the coolest things that you guys did. And then there was Quint and Bruce when they set this whole thing up was it has to be 100% accessible to the community.
Absolutely.
Sure. In more ways than just coming to see baseball.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that vision has stayed with you guys the entire way through.
Year round.
So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're right. Year round.
We bring the, you know, thank you for saying that. We sincerely, truly want to work with the community. And I think that, you know, the community's seen our best efforts and that we are truly out there trying to do the right thing always.
Yeah.
And so we enjoy having Soul Bowl, for example, down there, you know, and having the little kids come out. And it's the cutest thing because here are these little kids who play in their, you know, peewee leagues and all that stuff. And then they step out onto the field at our stadium and their eyes just get huge. Like, I can't believe I'm in a professional venue right now. And it's heartwarming. It really is. And we like to think we're doing a lot of good, and we've got some great plans coming forward too.
Okay, so can you slide a couple hints to us, or is everything kind of under wraps? And
some of the things are under wraps because we don't want to show all of our cards, you know. But for example, we're out in the community working on reading programs, and that's been really fun and successful. Yeah. It's really fun. We get the front office staff together, and we go and reenact Casey at the bat, but it's Kazoo, our mascot Kazoo at the bat. And we go out to the schools and stuff and perform that, and the kids just love it. And then we challenge the classes between third and fifth grades to read four books within a certain time frame. And then if they've got 100% participation, they're entered into a raffle to win a trip to a Blue Wahoos game.
Cool.
So we're just now that the season's here, we're getting to see those kids who have, you know, won that prize, and it's so much fun.
Can you still go and do the batting cages?
Pardon?
Can you still go and do the batting cages as like a group or individual thing?
It's something that we can set up as part of a group outing. Okay. It's something that we offer through our group sales. It really depends on when you want to come out. Right. You know, is the team in town? If the team's in town, it's a little bit more difficult because, you know.
Why would they need to practice? I mean, come on.
I know, they're so good. But, you know, it's really funny. I always, when we have these tours of the stadium, I'll ask the folks, you know, so the team comes, you know, our game starts at 6:30. What time do you think the players have to be there? And they're like 4:30. No, the guys actually start getting there 11, 12 o'clock. Sure. To work in the batting cage, maybe with the trainer or the strength and conditioning coach. And so it really depends on availability while the team is in town. When they're on the road, we've got a little bit more flexibility.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's fun.
It is so fun.
I've done it. I did it with Leap.
Did you? Yeah, very good. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a good time. We've done that where we've gotten in there and cranked up the pitching machine to 105 miles an hour to see what it's like to go up against Aroldis Chapman.
It's a little scary.
A little bit.
It's a little scary.
Just don't get in the way of that ball.
I don't think I've hit a fastball over 80. I think anything else like that, I just kind of step back.
I hit it accidentally just because I stuck my bat out.
Yeah.
Richard gets in there,
man,
we practically
hide right off
the cover off of it. That's right. We want him to suit up. Get in a blue
Wahoo. Yeah, exactly. Can I have pads, please?
If it weren't for that shoulder, that'd be great.
That's right. So all sorts of fun things like that, you know. And we've got First Circus is one of our entertainment acts that we've had from year one, and they're coming back to town this Friday when our new homestand starts, and they're crazy. The guys are crazy, and they get together with Kazoo, but kind of the nice thing about them in keeping with the community is we're going out to a couple of different schools. We're going to go out to Hill Kelly is one of our sponsors, and we're going out for Class Kids Day on Saturday, which is really neat event where parents bring their kids down and fingerprint them. And make it a fun thing for the kids
that's
to come and
program.
Meet some players.
We do internships with them, and that is Class Kids is a great program.
Really is. So we love being involved in all of that stuff that's going on. We'll also be at the mullet toss. So
God forbid, should a Wahoo not be representing in a mullet toss? You kind of have to go where the wind takes you.
So that's not like what Keith's hair was in the 80s. We're not talking about that.
No, it's
mullet
exactly.
Toss.
That's what inspired us.
Exactly, I was too young in the 80s to have a mullet.
I don't want
to
talk about it.
I wasn't even born in the 80s.
There we go. Well played.
Nicely done. Touché. We should stop there. Yeah.
Do you guys have any needs? Do you guys have volunteers, or do you guys still need sponsors, or are there any events coming up that you need help with?
We're always looking for sponsors. It depends on the opportunity that we have. We're very fortunate that we have a lot of nonprofits reach out, you know. And I was just slipping Lori a note here while she was talking, you know. She's looking for fundraising. We have fundraising opportunities that we do through the Blue Wahoos. Sure. A lot of 501c3s have benefited from that. And I think it's something that we need to do a better job promoting because it's easy to do. It pays back to them.
It's something better than a bake sale and a little different than just give me money.
And we can customize it, you know, to what you're looking to do. So that makes it kind of fun and something unique that wouldn't be a typical, like you said, bake sale or turkey raffle or, you know, selling candy bars and all that stuff.
That's great.
Yeah. So
that's a neat idea.
I'm pumped up. I think we should just sit here and have our little think tank and brainstorm the rest of the afternoon.
Lori has to bring the margaritas, but I'm down.
I'm down too for that. That sounds good.
Once a month, maybe twice a month, right back here.
Stadium, oh, too. Man, let's do that. Let's get Chef up here, right?
Any game I've ever been in.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. And the funny thing is, thank you very much for saying that. We actually won an award last year from PETA and we thought that's interesting. Yeah. An award from PETA, but it was because we're one of the few stadiums that offers a vegetarian burger. It's a black bean burger that we sell. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
That is nice.
Food's good. I'll be honest. The food's good.
Thank you,
this
Chef.
This is coming from a chef.
Chef Wilson, is fantastic. Yeah. Chef Travis just does, I'll tell him you said that.
I've done Egg Fest and stuff. As a matter of fact, we had Kristen Fairchild in earlier today with Chain Reactions. We were talking about the stadium, what a great setup it is. But for, when you go to some of these stadiums, sometimes you either pay way too much. Mm-hmm. Or it's a pretzel that's been in that hot box for 4 days.
Right.
You know, or your hot dog is so overcooked, you know, but it's like, it's good.
Thanks.
I can eat the burger and enjoy it. I like the hot dogs and the pretzels are awesome. So,
thank you for saying it. I will relay that back to him. He is so creative. Chef is so creative. So every time we've got a team coming to town,
he comes up with something, right?
Jacksonville Suns are the affiliate of the Miami Marlins, and so he came up with the Havana Nachos, which I thought was very creative. So he's always got something going, something exciting on tap. So And he'll come up with something to honor. When we had Tucker Barnhart here, for example, he created the Barnyard Burger, and that was in honor of Tucker. Mm-hmm. And hey, you know, everybody who he seems to create something around has moved up to Louisville and then maybe the Reds. So exciting stuff.
Oh.
Yeah, maybe he's our good luck charm.
That's right.
That's have some food named after you, play professional ball
What Keith was saying about, you know, the experience at Blue Wahoo Stadium and to be able to go there and to actually enjoy stadium food.
So being a chef, when I go for concession food, I'm going for concession food. I'm not there to eat healthy.
Expectations are not high.
We're
not looking for fine dining and fufu and all that stuff. I want a freaking concession pretzel or burger or dog or beer or whatever.
Right.
And you guys deliver on it.
Thank you very much. I mentioned earlier those surveys that we do, and we hear back about our food all the time, and we're always reading those surveys, seeing how we can do better. Can we improve? We had some feedback one time about our hot dogs, and it was very positive, and the man was so excited. You know, my wife and I came to the game last night, and we had 3 hot dogs each. We ordered one, and we put this condiment on it, and we loved the condiment, and it really sold us on it, and so we went back and got another one each of us, and then we got a third, and we've been looking online all night. We can't find it, so we thought maybe you could share with us who your vendor was of this. And we're thinking, what the heck was this? So called the guy, and he described it more to us. It was this next to the ketchup and the mustard, and it was this clear jelly that we'd put out there. Anyway, long story short, he'd put hand sanitizer on his hot dog. And so we thought, well, good news, bad news is, you know, we're happy you enjoyed your hot
dog. Did he say how many beers he'd had first?
He'd been drinking Pepsi the whole night.
He was.
That's what he told us anyway. But there was a learning for us. Listen to your service, because we had moved the hand sanitizer away. This was, 2012 when this happened. But we still talk about the Sandy
dog.
Yeah. And we said to him, how are you feeling? Are you feeling okay? You know, it was the funniest thing. So still talk about the Sandy dogs.
Poor guy.
So, yeah.
Sandy dogs.
Okay,
there is your
testament. If the food still tastes good, even with hand sanitizer on it, you must be doing something right.
We try. We do our best. We don't encourage hand sanitizer in any of our food.
Ever. So website and contact if somebody wants to do tickets or sponsors.
Absolutely.
Or find out about other packages that you guys offer.
Yeah, our website is bluewahoos.com. Pretty easy to remember.
Okay.
Right? Bluewahoos.com. That does have all of our ticketing information, but of course, if they call our front office at 850-934-8444, you can speak to a ticketing representative themselves. A lot of people have questions about the seating. I've got a child with me, you know, maybe a person who is wheelchair, needing to have a spot for a wheelchair. And so we can answer any questions, but a lot of folks just like going to the website, buying their tickets online and then coming and seeing us.
I need a personal tour, because I'm trying to figure out we're coming up for picking these tickets.
That's right.
For football.
The
I have to get back in, and I have to visualize the stadium. Like, okay, if there was a football field.
So they have this thing called the internet. And on this internet.
The interwebs. That series of tubes.
On this internet is a diagram of the stadium.
It is quite accurate. Quite accurate.
107, 109, 111.
There we go.
What are ticket prices? What are the levels?
It depends on the day, but you can get a seat as low as $5, you were saying. So, I mean, it really depends on where you want to sit, what day you want to come. It varies. We have tickets up to $54 if you want to sit up in our Hancock Bank Club, which is fantastic. Chef Travis does the food for the visitors.
It's a little bit
more
than concessions, so go for it.
It is, but it also allows you, if you want that hot dog, you can come downstairs right from it and get your hot dog, go right back up and enjoy the beautiful view of the bay and watch some good baseball. So it really depends on the day, what kind of ticket you're looking for. But
very affordable.
Very affordable. And that's something that we pride ourselves on. We do all sorts of little things that kind of allow us to keep the ticket pricing down, you know. So it's really up to the fan what they're looking for out of the experience.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for hanging out today.
Thanks for having me. This has been fun.
So I hope nobody has to go anywhere, but we have to get off the air.
What?
I know, right?
I don't want to get off the air.
Get out the blender.
We're having too much fun.
No, that's it. Okay, if you want to come have fun with us here,
yes,
you can find us at Pecola Radio X on Twitter. You can find us at Pecola BRX on Facebook, or you can find us at Pensacola.BusinessRadioX.com. Or you are more than welcome to come on down to the studio at, I'm sorry, I forgot that address.
321
across from Bob Sisters Blues Cafe. If we are here, you are more than welcome to come hang out. I want to thank all of you for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Keith.
This has been Pensacola Business Radio, where business is good and your work matters. Mm-hmm.